Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. We may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It's the weekly worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, and we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everybody back as a cold bug has ripped its way through the McBurney compound over the past 10 days or so. I finally succumbed to it about, I think, 3 days ago. Two nights ago, I could not read aloud to my children. I had to stop in the middle and I had to say, I think I'm done. But the one cool thing about catching a cold is that you get the incredible radio voice. You get that really deep, deep, when you want to go deep. And so anyway, we're all on the upside of it, although my extremely attractive audio engineer never succumbed at all. She's got super T-cell antibodies going there. She's got super resistance. But anyway, so yeah, back in the day, we could just say, you know, a bug's going through. Now it's like, is it that bug? Is it the bug? Well, we don't want to know if it's that bug. And fortunately, our general shelter-in-place philosophy has served our neighbors well, as we pretty much haven't gone anywhere this past week. Not by design, but just by the way things worked out. So, but welcome, one and all, as I bring you up to speed on the events of the week. We go immediately to the widespread hysteria file, where we check in with CDC Director Rochelle Walensky. That's right, Chief Hysteric, former head of something in Boston having to do with public health, and now has been appointed by the Hyde-Barris administration as the Director of the Centers for Disease Confusion and Control and Confusion. Here's what she said to CBS This Morning. But before I get to that, let's talk about CBS This Morning. And not just CBS This Morning, but the Today Show and whatever ABC has in the morning. Is it Good Morning America? Whatever the morning news is, mix that up and amalgamate that with all of your local news broadcasts, every one of them in every city, in every state across the country. They have become an echo chamber of COVID hysteria. The networks and their news broadcasts are simply incapable of good, interesting reporting anymore. They don't do that anymore. So they're now reliant on fiction writers from the Ministry of Truth at the Hyde-Barris administration to gin up scary stories to prop up their pathetic ratings, because they're no longer interesting or good. They're just scary now. So they increase their ratings by scaring everyone. The Delta variant is killing young people. They're begging, they're dying, they're choking, they're gagging. Notice, though, as they report on the Delta variant tearing its way through the population, no video of hospitals being overrun, no video of people dying in the... You know, if they had video of people actually gagging and croaking in the parking lot, that would lead the local news. That would lead. You've heard, if it bleeds, it leads. It's true. But they don't have that video. Why? Because they're making it all up. It's a fantasy. Yes, more people are getting infected. Yes, the Delta variant is more transmissible. Yes, I'm sure all that's true. It's just not that scary. That's all. But that doesn't matter. They're going to make it as scary as they can, because making it scary props up their sagging, pathetic ratings over at the network. And it increases the power of the Hyde-Barris Ministry of Truth. That's an important part of the equation. And it justifies to the legacy industries in the United States, like the people who make the toilet paper and the shampoo and the deodorant, it justifies the billions and billions of dollars in ad revenue that they're pouring down a deep, dark hole to oblivion. Gotta have those ratings to justify those billions from... Unilever and all of those guys. Yes, said that. But anyway, now let's get back to what CDC Director Rochelle Walensky said to the interviewer at CBS This Morning. Here's what Rochelle said, quote, "We can halt the chain of transmission of this virus," unquote. If we unify together, if we mask in the interim, if we get people vaccinated, we can halt this in just a couple of weeks. She said, just this past week, she said, just 2 weeks is all we need, folks. Mask up, go get your vaccination, and in a couple of weeks, poof, life will go back to normal. So she said that with a straight face. And the robotic interviewer at CBS This Morning, apparently incapable of following up with a, what are you talking about? We've heard that, but you said that like 500 days ago, I heard. 15 days to slow the spread, Rochelle. You expect us to take you seriously? Hold on, I have to cough. Fortunately, here at the Weekly Worldview, we have the high-tech cough button that I'm able to hit so that you don't have to suffer through as I succumb to the virus. Actually, I'm not succumbed to the virus. I'm on the other side, I do believe. It was worse a couple of days ago. Back to Rochelle, she says, if we unify together, because she's a moron, because you can't unify if you're not together. Together is extraneous. You don't need that extra word. But why does Rochelle throw in all those extra words? Well, for the same reason I throw in an extra Rochelle. Because she's just making it up as she goes along. And me too. I'm just kind of ad-libbing it here, trying to be funny with the Rochelle. She's just trying to string enough words together so that they don't ask her a follow-up question. If we unify together, as opposed to unifying apart. And also, Rochelle, the idea that you can halt the chain of transmission on a respiratory virus is insane. If you really believe that's true, you are insane. And I don't believe you believe that is true. I believe that you are devious. You are power hungry, you are ambitious, and you are another of the naked Marxists who have seized the Republic. I don't think that you're delusional or stupid or anything like that, Rochelle. Just a couple of weeks, that's all we need. All right, there. That's from the Widespread Hysteria file from Chief Hysteric, Rochelle Walensky. We now go to the Just Desserts file, where former Senator Barbara Boxer was assaulted and robbed while walking in Oakland last Monday afternoon in broad daylight in front of God and everybody. That's right. When asked what happened, Michelle said, I'm sorry, Michelle. I said Rochelle. I meant Barbara. Sorry. Barbara Boxer said, quote, he came up from behind me. He pushed me hard. And then before I could fall, it was like he grabbed my phone in front. He stole her phone before fleeing in a waiting car. It's not like he stole her phone. He actually stole her phone. Anyway, she says she is thankful. Wait a minute. She released a statement. Hold on, I have to cough again. All right, glad to get that out there. Just throw a mask on there before I cough all over my extremely attractive audio engineer. Although it's probably all my coughing and hacking and wheezing that has led to her building up such a tremendous resistance against this particular virus. Barbara Boxer's office released a statement so that no one person could be held accountable for anything just in case. The statement read, quote, she is thankful that she was not seriously injured, and she is the only one thankful that we're aware of. Oh, wait, I made that part up. She's the only, even her grandchildren are unhappy that she wasn't, that's probably a bridge too far, right? I should allow her to enjoy her grandchildren. Now, after the millions of children who she's assented to murder, I don't even want her to enjoy her grandchildren. In fact, I would lay odds better than even that Barbara Boxer's grandchildren end up generally hating her. That's my general prediction for, in fact, they're probably all in their 50s now. So they probably, their hatred for her is probably well established. If she has any kids, I don't even know. All right. So from Barbara Boxer being boxed and robbed, by the way, that was from the Just Desserts file, Barbara Boxer having presided over the destruction of the Western justice ethic that we've built for a couple of thousand years. maybe 5,000 if you want to go all the way back. She's presided over the destruction of it, and now she has been victimized by it, at least to some small degree, so that she can get a little taste of what she has inflicted on the rest of us. Now, from the widespread compliance file, we have an update on a story we did last week. It appears that Vikings offensive line coach Rick Dennison, and it's not that he's offensive in any, you know, bad kind of way. You know, it's not like he smells bad or anything. It's not that he tells off-color jokes in the wrong situation. No, he's the offensive line coach, for those of you who aren't NFL fans. Vikings offensive line coach Rick Dennison will not be leaving the team over his opposition to taking the experimental coronavirus vaccine. He will not be leaving the team. No. In fact, Breitbart reports that reports of his demise have been greatly exaggerated. That's right. Apparently, the team has come to an agreement with the coach. The agreement is an acknowledgement that the team and the coach will comply with the applicable COVID protocols, yada, 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 whether Dennison is vaccinated or not. Dennison had asked the Vikings for an exemption. ESPN, slobbering all over themselves, jumped in and quickly reported that he was being fired. And then others reported that, no, he quit. Well, it turns out neither he nor the team had made any determination except that he didn't want the shot. That was all they knew. And then they figured out a way to work it out. Why? Because everyone knows the COVID protocols are BS. So hey, listen, coach, it's all BS. Let's just figure out a workaround. And they sat down and they figured it out. And so this reminds me, folks, I've had a couple of conversations over this past week with colleagues of mine who feel their job may be threatened over their hesitancy to take this shot. And they've actually called me asking for advice. Hey, Doug, what should I do? And I've told them, you know, you might want to try just a little diplomatic pushback. Just a little bit. I mean, these tyrants are acting as if they can mandate that you take this shot, but in fact, they cannot. They cannot. And if you don't allow it, they can't actually do it. But if they say they can do it loud enough and you believe it, then they'll do it. But if you're prepared to give a little bit of pushback and let them know that, first of all, you don't have the right to force me to get any kind of medicine. You're my employer. You're not my doctor. You're not even allowed to prescribe medicine. In fact, that's illegal for you to even say that, number one. Number two, if you are going to let me go and I'm going to lose my job because of my personal decision about my own medical, about my own health, then I am going to retain a civil rights attorney and I'm going to take action against you because you have violated my civil rights, my civil liberties, my God-given right to bodily autonomy that, by the way, everybody worshipped before. Everybody worshipped my body, my choice before. But now, no. It's your body, Hyde and Barris's choice. That's it. It's your body, it's Gavin Newsom's choice. And then who's the governor in Colorado? That's right, there is no governor. The office is vacant, I apologize. Anyway, for those of you who are concerned that your job may be threatened because you're hesitant to take an experimental vaccine, an emergency vaccine for an emergency that ended about a year and a half ago, if you're worried, just sit down and gently write a very diplomatic, I don't want to do this, you don't have the right to do this to me, and if you fire me, of course you have the right to fire me, but know that I will seek legal remedy for the fact that you violated my civil rights. And folks, you'll be surprised. A little bit of pushback, and these wannabe tyrants, they fold up like a $3 suitcase because they don't actually have the authority to do what they're doing. And deep down in their black little hearts, they know it. Or they're just acting in fear, just like you. Your boss might be operating in a state of fear, not a state of authority. He doesn't even want to do it. He doesn't even want to make you do it. If you could help him find a way out of it, he would find a way out of it. So don't be afraid to try that. And don't be afraid to lose your job. And don't be afraid to take a little risk to do what's right. Because we do right, and we risk the consequences. Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, doing saltwater gargles in between the breaks there. So I might go a little long on the breaks this week because I got to do my saltwater gargle. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to talk with you people. All right. Okay, so we've covered the, yeah, I might lose my job. Okay, so just give that some thought, ladies and gentlemen. Remember, this is mostly fantasy. This is mostly a fantasy that's being made up on the spot by people who have absolutely no actual confidence in what they're saying. All right, now, we go from there into the domestic tranquility file where, let's see here, Shakopee, Minnesota. Shakopee, Minnesota. It's a suburb of Minneapolis. A lady named America Mafalda Thayer was an employee of MyPillow. You've probably heard of MyPillow, right? Well, she was in a long-term abusive relationship with Alexis Sabori. That allegedly, right? Allegedly, they were in a relationship. Sabori, by the way, was convicted in 2017 of domestic assault. That's not alleged. He was convicted. So this is a guy who beats on women, or at least he's been known to beat on at least one woman, which typically if a guy is convicted of beating on one woman, he typically he beats on women in general. Well, on July 28th, at approximately 2:30 in the afternoon, broad daylight in front of God and everybody, Shakopee police officers responded to a report of a homicide. Thayer had been beheaded in broad daylight, apparently by her longtime abusive boyfriend, Alexis Sabori, who's in jail right now. It's horrifying, right? A beheading in broad daylight in the suburbs of Minneapolis in America. Just let that sink in. That's the state of domestic tranquility in America. Men who like to beat on women are allowed to roam the streets and victimize women to the point where eventually some of them beat them, hurt them, some of them kill them, and this one has beheaded his. Newsmax reminds us that the beheading, the broad daylight beheading in the suburbs of Minneapolis comes just days after the Minneapolis City Council voted 11-1 to disband the Minneapolis Police Department. Ironically enough. Deeper into the domestic tranquility file, we move west to Kern County in California. Kern County Sheriff's Deputy Philip Campus, 35-year-old man, was shot to death last Sunday just outside of Bakersfield, California. The man who shot and killed him, allegedly, was the subject of a restraining order that prohibited him from possessing weapons. It allegedly prohibited him from possessing weapons. Apparently, it did not actually prohibit him from possessing weapons. Deputies arrived at the residence. They were told by a female outside that two or three shooting victims were inside and that there was a man with a gun in there. And as they approached, the man with the gun in there started shooting. They took cover. They were not hit. They had a standoff for a couple of hours. SWAT came in, tried to approach the house. Campus and another deputy, DeSander Guerrero, were struck. Campus was struck fatally. Finally, around 6:30 p.m., the suspect was shot by authorities and killed. Inside the home were three dead victims, a 42-year-old woman and two males, age 17 and 24. They were the suspect's son and their mother. So this guy basically killed his wife and his sons and then wanted to kill the police and then killed himself. Why? Probably some stress in his life, some difficulties. He was having a hard time on a number of fronts, and one of the options he had available to him was to kill everyone and himself, and he chose that as an option because we live in a society that's violent and soaked in innocent blood. And so one of the options on the table these days is suicide. And when suicide's an option that's on the table, homicide's not far behind. And if you're going to kill whoever made you mad, well, maybe it would feel good to kill a bunch of other people too. And so that's the thought processes that our extremely nice and tolerant just a system has fostered in the minds of the unbalanced and the criminal. Okay, so we go from Kern County into the war file. And the war is in Fort Worth in the Como neighborhood. Last Monday, police say a small gathering was happening in someone's backyard. Well, there was an argument, one person left, and then that person returned, got into an argument with more people, and then he shot at least one person. He didn't kill that person right at that moment. And then the other people at the party started chasing after the shooter. And apparently his gun jammed. And finally he got his gun unjammed. He stopped, he turned around and started to fire into the crowd. At which point, the crowd gathered stones from the ground and stoned the gunman to death. Yes. This was in Fort Worth, Texas. The group eventually caught up with the gunman. That's right. He tried firing at them again. He hit at least two more people. This time he killed one of them. Police say at that time he lost his life, quote, by what we believe to be stones. That, yes. So folks stopped and they picked up pavers that were lining the yard. And they began throwing the pavers, the landscaping stones, and the bricks at the gunman until he died. So he was stoned with stones until he was dead. Very biblical. I love this. Police say at that time he lost his life by what we believe to be stones, which what would be indicated by all those stones around him and the massive head injuries. Anyway, police are also investigating another shooting that happened the Sunday prior afternoon in the same neighborhood. And that violence comes just weeks after a 4th of July shooting in which eight were injured by gunfire. Injured by gunfire. Okay. They were injured by a person who shot them with a gun. Technically, I guess you could say they were injured by gunfire, but that removes responsibility from a human actor, and we don't like to do that because people don't get injured by gunfire unless there's a person behind the gun, and that person is the one who should be held responsible. And that responsibility should never be edited out of the report. But our modern urinalism schools teach reporters to remove any personal responsibility from any situation at all costs, all the time, always. Because that's urinalism. That's what it's worth. We go from there to the good news file, because we don't have a lot of good news. What with the decline and fall of Western civilization happening around us? The naked Marxists having stolen the Republic right in front of us, and now the medical tyranny descending, just as I said it would. I have friends who told me, it's going to be okay, Doug. We're going to get past this. Everything's going in the right direction. Don't worry. It's going to be okay. And now, I'm sure that when I encounter them again, they'll be like, well, why didn't you get vaccinated then? You know, we could have gotten past all this. Didn't you hear Rochelle? All we did, it was a couple of weeks, but you wouldn't. Selfish. All right, but to the good news file. We go to Anchorage, Alaska, where a once popular strip club is now the Open Door Baptist Church. That's right. That's right. These folks had been trying to buy this strip club for many years. And the owner had been resistant, but something happened during COVID or whatever. And the owner said, you know what? If that deal still stands from the people who want to make it a church, I'll take it. And the Baptist came in and they turned the show floor into a sanctuary. That's right. And right there where the stripper pole was, there's now a pulpit where they will be preaching the gospel. And that's good news. That's better than burning a strip club to the ground. In fact, burning a strip club to the ground is the next best thing, but of course only after you have legally purchased it and taken out all the proper permits and alerted the fire department and taken all the proper precautions. And make sure everybody's wearing a mask. Because that smoke, that can be an issue, right? All right. So congratulations. I suppose I should give credit where credit is due. That's Linda Dunnigan. Linda Dunnigan is the Baptist who bought the strip club. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. So congratulations. I wish them all the best. If I'm ever in Anchorage and there's a chance I could be, I will stop by and visit. Well, if it's a Sunday or a Wednesday night or if you're open, you know. Basically, let's go to another story here. He said with a very adroit segue to the invasion file, ladies and gentlemen. Last week, AND Magazine reports, last week a crowd of at least 1,000 illegals marched across the Manhattan Bridge in New York City and shut down traffic to demand citizenship. Now, they were not demanding that at some point in the future the government should take some action or Congress or something to help them to be on a path. No. They demand full citizenship right now, and they stopped traffic on the bridge, and they demanded that. This was a follow-on protest to a March 5th, 2021 protest when immigrants shut down both the Manhattan and the Brooklyn bridges. Their agenda? Well, what do you think their agenda is? Well, here's what they say. After years of family separation, living under the fear of deportation and being terrorized by our government, we celebrate our resistance and we welcome the Biden administration to enact this pathway to citizenship for all 11 million undocumented people, ending immigration detention immediately, investigating abuses at the DHS, and stopping the arrest of immigrants, dude. Unquote. Well, I don't know why I always go into Cheech Marin. Anyways, I probably should have read that in a deadpan, white, upper-middle-class lesbian voice, because that's really who's behind all this. The Mexican dudes, they just want to work. That's all. In fact, I apologize to all my Mexican brothers if I insulted you with my Cheech Marin. I'll have to redo that in the upper-middle-class, white, lesbian, guilt-ridden, freak voice. Anyway, the organization is called Community Change, and it was not founded by anyone named Jose. It has an explicit strategic plan for the transformation of America. It's called The Path to Power, 2018 to 2033. It's funded by Jose, Paco, and no, it's not. It's funded by the Ford Foundation, the Kellogg Foundation, the Open Society Foundation, and the Tides Foundation. All funded by leftist, white, guilty liberals and George Soros, the spawn of Satan himself. So not a Jose, no, not a Paco in there, uh-uh. No Emilios, mm-mm. No Javier. No. But they, anyway, notice their agenda, Path to Power 2018 to 2033. So this is the problem, is that the leftists, They're playing the long game, whereas the folks who are supposed to be protecting us politically from these maniacs, they play the game 2 years at a time. They're called Republicans, and that's why they're getting rolled over by the Marxists and the communists and the leftists and all of that, because they don't play the long game. But the communists are playing the long game, and they've got all the time in the world. At least they think they do. But as I said in response to these people who think they can tell you you have to take this vaccine, just a little strategic diplomatic pushback against these people who have their knives out for our God-given liberties and our nation, just a little bit of strategic diplomatic pushback, and they all collapse like a house of cards. Why don't you grow up? It's the Weekly Worldview. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we do all this. And so last Friday night, while the local news media was preaching hysteria and fear over the Delta variant, here at the McBurney compound, we had a more pressing issue. Not the Delta variant, no. Most of us were down with some sort of cold, yes. But the real threat was coyotes. Uh-huh. And coyotes are scary, man. Coyotes are not cool. I don't like them. So here's what happened. So about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, the executive assistant to the bird whisperer was awakened when she heard outside of her window something amiss, rustling and shuffling and whining and crying, and a peahen cawing or cooing. What do they call it? Meowing. And so the executive assistant to the bird whisperer woke the bird whisperer up, and the bird whisperer dashed out of the house without her shoes and saw a beast in the darkness with her peafowl in her mouth, in its mouth. So there was a peahen being actively taken by a beast. And we think it was a coyote, but it was dark and we don't know. But the bird whisperer exited the house with no shoes and ran near a full acre over brambles and rocks and stickers and sticks and rough ground all the way to the back fence and chased the beast away and took the peahen. The beast could not get the peahen over the fence, and so the peahen was rescued by the bird whisperer. She chased that shadowy beast back over the back fence with bloody feet and in pain. The bird whisperer rescued the peahen and brought the peahen back to the house, and then she nursed the peahen for the better part of 48 hours, but the peahen succumbed to her wounds and has perished. And so here at the McBurney compound, we have a healthy respect for infectious disease and virus. We don't want to get sick, but coyotes are scary. And right now here at the McBurney compound, the coyotes are, we're going to go to war with the coyotes, and the coyotes have no idea what they got coming. Anyway, it's a day of sadness here at the McBurney compound because we thought the peahen was going to make it. Bird whisperer doing all she could with the... But anyway, we'll hang in there and we'll go to war against the coyotes, and we may or may not acquire any more fowl. We have an awful lot of fowl here, so but very sad. But I don't want to bring you down. I want to, let's see. So let's go to the Hyde and Barris file. The Hyde and Barris administration has created its own file because it's so prolific in its production of material. We go to, let's see, where are we here? In New Jersey, homeowner Patricia Delascio was ordered by a judge to take down her anti-Biden signs. Why is the judge anti-Biden? No, it's because her signs violated an ordinance prohibiting obscenities. So you've seen these signs, I'm sure. The F. Biden signs, right? The F. Biden flags. I don't support them. I'm against them. I'm against vulgarity and profanity in public in general. And not just because I have kids, but because it coarsens the nature of our dialogue when we lower ourselves to profanity and vulgarity. And not that I'm not capable of that. Of course I am. That's why I'm against it, because I know I'm the biggest victim of it. I fall victim to it easier than most. That's why I don't want it to be tolerated for my own self. Well, anyways, so a judge, in his good sense, said you can't fly a flag or have a sign that says that, which common sense should say that. This woman should be, I mean, she should have enough shame, enough conscience in her heart to know you can't put that sign out there. But no, she wants to go to court and fight, and now the ACLU is going to back her up. Her and her whatever. It's
against Biden.
It's against Biden, but the ACLU, yeah. Uh-huh. Let's see. So this woman and her daughter, Andrea, they both are well, they're dedicated to having this profanity and this vulgarity in their front yard for God and everybody to see. And the pair will now be represented by ACLU attorney Alexander Shalom. Uh-huh. Shalom, a godless Jew. Yep. And here's what Shalom has to say. All New Jerseyans have the right to express themselves freely under the First Amendment. The ordinance against posting obscene signs should never have been applied to political signs. Says the godless Jew. Let's see. And it appears that the Supreme Court agrees with Shlomi here, Shalom, the godless Jew. The U.S. Supreme Court back in 1971 ruled in favor of a man protesting the Vietnam War with a jacket that had a similar profanity upon it. They said the government could not regulate an individual's right to express vulgarity to protect public morality. So that's 1971. That's 50 years the government has said, look, public morality is of no value. It means nothing. It's not to be defended by the organs of the state. So that's, and here we are 50 years later, and we are a much more vulgar, much more coarse society in which we don't just curse at each other anymore. We behead each other in the suburbs in broad daylight. Thank you very much. To the Supreme Court. Here's what the Supreme Court said in their opinion back in 1971. They said one man's vulgarity is another's lyric. Ah, we're so cute. You know, that Supreme Court opinion is vulgar, in my humble opinion. And it was yet another of the threads that was set out. In fact, what it was, not a thread, it was more like a crack in a windshield 50 years ago, just a little bitty crack. And then over the course of 50 years of rumbling and bumbling and the vibrations and the jostling of life and the general stress of man against man and disagreements and all the things that go on, that crack has now blinded the vision of the driver and threatens the whole vehicle to go off over a cliff. Thank you very much to the Supreme Court and many others who have just little chip by little chip. Speaking of that, we go to the Black Lives Matter file, where PJ Media reports that Black Lives Matter in Dallas has launched a new campaign urging parents in wealthy Highlands Park to sign a pledge to keep their children from applying to top colleges. That's right. They mailed letters into the Highland Park, which is an upper middle class neighborhood in North Dallas. And they mailed the letters, and here's part of what the letters said from our friends at Black Lives Matter. They said, "We understand that you are white and you live in the Highland Park Independent School District. And you benefit from the enormous privileges taken at the expense of communities of color. You live in the whitest and the wealthiest neighborhood in Dallas. And you earned or inherited your money through the oppressing of people of color. So it is our understanding that you are also a Democrat and a supporter of the Black Lives Matter movement, which makes you one of our white allies and puts you in a position to help. Yeah, you can help correct these cruel injustices. We need you to step up and back up your words with action and truly sacrifice to make our segregated city more just. We want you to pledge that your children will not apply nor attend any Ivy League school, nor any of the top 50 schools as reported by UF News and World Report. Mm-hmm. Hold your white privileged friends and families and neighbors with children to this same standard. Having your children attend these schools take away spaces from students of color who really need the influence that these schools provide. Now, we know that this sounds like a tough commitment to make, but it is truly disheartening to see wealthy white folks sending donations to Black Lives Matter or putting up yard sign as if to say that minimal effort is all y'all prepared to do in the fight for racial justice. Is that all y'all willing to do? We want y'all to do some more.
Unquote. All right, so there's no confirmation if this was a prank, but I have a feeling it was. I have a feeling that there's, I don't know, I would say someone at the Daily Wire might have mailed this out, just, or someone from the Babylon Bee put this together and mailed it into the Highlands Park neighborhood. I don't know. But hey, even if it's a prank, if it keeps one kid out of one of these liberal Marxist indoctrination colleges, isn't it worth it? I think so. All right. So from there, if we can even recover from that, is there a way to even come back from that? Oh, here we go. From the intended consequences file. Millions of renters across the country face eviction as the federal moratorium is set to expire. In fact, it expired yesterday. That's right. The Congress couldn't get their act together to extend it. And here's the thing, folks. The Democrats could have gotten this done. They could have extended this moratorium. Why didn't they? In fact, if I'm not mistaken, this moratorium was just a fiat out of the CDC. The Centers for Disease Control suddenly said, you can't evict people. So why didn't the Democrats continue the eviction moratorium? Because, folks, they want the intended consequences. And here it is. Listen to NYU Professor Ingrid. She's a housing expert, whatever that is. A housing expert? What is that? Does she know how to put on siding? Can she fix a broken window? Does she know how to make a screen door balance up so that it closes properly? She's a housing expert? I don't know. She says, quote, the hottest to reach rents is they're also the most vulnerable to eviction. And that group is large enough to cause an unprecedented spike in eviction filings, warrants, and ultimately homelessness. If we don't get them and their landlords, the assistance Congress has made available. I'm warning you, people, this is going to be a problem. And NYU Professor Ingrid, she may not be able to fix a creaking door as a housing expert. But she is right that there's going to be a spike in eviction filings, warrants, ultimately homelessness, stress, tension. That's what they want. More stress, more tension, more fear. Those are the intended consequences. All right, I mean, I'm down with that B3 solo. That was great. But the rest of it, it sounds like a Joe Biden speech. You don't know what that guy's saying. What was that all about? Gotta love that B3, though. All right, now, we go from there, ladies and gentlemen, into our final segment where I'm probably going to have to go fast. From the Decline and Fall file, Breitbart reports that the International Olympic Committee has reaffirmed its support for transgender athletes. When medical director Richard Budget declared, quote, trans women are women and should be included in women's sport when we possibly can. When can we possibly? Well, how about weightlifting? Well, we'll get to that. Here's another. What else does the medical director, Richard Budget, says? After 100 years of promoting women's sport, it's up to each of the international federations to ensure that they try and protect women's sport, whatever that means. Science will help, experience will help, and time will help, he said as he allowed a New Zealand weightlifter, Laurel Hubbard, The first tranny man. He's a transgendered woman, which means he's a man. He's going to compete in the weightlifting competition at the Olympics. Let's try to protect women's sport. Science will help. Experience will help. And time will help. And for that weightlifter, you know, testosterone will help. Anyway, Larry Hubbard competed. Let's see here. He's going to compete against the girls on Monday. So this coming week, the tranny will compete against the girls on Monday. He's 43 years old, and he competed as a man before. And apparently he wasn't all that good because he was a faggot, and he saw an opportunity. So here's a faggot who's not a very good weightlifter who suddenly now has an opportunity to compete against the girls. So he just declares himself a woman when really all he is a fag who's not that good at what he does. Well, yeah. Anyway, he set some records back in New Zealand in juniors competition when he was just out of high school back in the late 1990s. Mm-hmm. But he never was a blip in the weightlifting world as a full-grown man. I did a news search from 1997 to 2010. His name never even showed up in any reporting on weightlifting or anything like that. Why? Because he was marginal at best, mediocre at best. But against the girls, he'll probably do pretty good. He might even snag the bronze. All right. Now, let's go. I want to talk about Simone Biles. Because, not that I'm all that interested in gymnastics in general, but I am interested in civilizational events, which this is, I do believe. So she withdrew from the team events, right? And by the way, here at the McBurney compound, we've been watching some of the Olympics. We were on the edge of our seat watching men's badminton last night. it was intense. No, but we do like to watch the swimming and the running, the races, right? Yeah. And we like to watch what is it called?
You don't care.
Gymnastics. We like to watch the gymnastics because it's impressive, right? So anyway, she withdrew and she said she was fighting with her own head. That's a quote. She said, it's bad when you're just too worried about what everybody else is going to say. Think the internet. She also said, it's just like when everybody tweeted you and you feel the weight of the world. I felt it. But I feel like I have to do it for other people first. So she feels like she has to perform for other people first. To me, I mean, I've performed on stage. And it was generally for other people. That's why I did it. And I liked it. I wasn't very good at it, so I didn't do it very long. But anyway, she went on to say, I just didn't want to go on. I have to focus on my mental health. We have to protect our minds and our bodies and not just go out and do what the world wants us to do. And I can respect that. Later on, the next day, as a matter of fact, Biles later hinted that it was the sexual abuse she suffered at the hands of Larry Nassar, the team doctor, who's been convicted, by the way, of raping children. She was one of them. She agreed with a tweet that said that was in part behind her decision to bow out. Which I was not aware of that. Because I don't follow the sport. I knew that this coach had been convicted. I didn't know she was one of the kids that he raped. I did not know that. And then there was a report that came out on Saturday that Biles said that she chose not to to compete in the Thursday all-around event because she said emotional health, and then she said she had a little bit of the twisties, unquote, a little bit of the twisties. I didn't know what that was. I never heard that term. Well, the twisties are when a gymnast, when gymnasts are in midair and they're twisting and spinning and they lose awareness of where they are, making it difficult to land safely. So she said that she's dealing with the twisties. And so that makes sense to me, right? I saw her fall off the balance beam. That was actually pretty scary. I mean, she could have been hurt or killed. So if that's happened to her, as apparently it happens to these type of gymnasts. Anyway, taken all together, the details of Biles' withdrawal are, you know, kind of as strange as this whole last 18 months have been, where nothing makes sense and you wonder why people didn't just come out and say what was and what wasn't. And I mean, if it was the twisties, why not just say that from the beginning? Was she just embarrassed? Maybe, I guess this happens as gymnasts get older. And so maybe she didn't want to say it out loud to make it true. Maybe she just didn't want to acknowledge that she's actually at the end of her career. But maybe it's not really the twisties. But maybe the twisties are all about something deeper, a lot deeper. Anyway, this whole past week, you know, so-called conservatives have made fun of her. All week they've called her a quitter. Leftists, of course, they love a quitter, especially if it embarrasses America and, you know, provides them a vehicle so that they can hype their racist and their sexist animosity and attack the patriarchy. So this story provides the left with plenty of fodder for all that they do. But I see Simone Biles as a living analogy of America. Here is a creature at the pinnacle of her glory. She's strong, she's privileged, she's talented, she's trained and skilled, and busily doing what she has always done. She's confident, she's dominant, she's victorious. But then, in a moment, she was caught unawares. In midair even, flying effortlessly, as it seemed, toward her next great prize. But she was overcome by the weight of the corruption she'd been carrying inside of herself like a cancer. The hurt and the lies and the abuse and the corruption. She thought she could go on. But she discovered all of a sudden, in fact, she could not. The weight of the abuse and the corruption that abuse made inside of her was more than she knew. And it pulled her down to the ground. And as she landed hard and off kilter on her backside, confused, bleary-eyed, all the wolves who had first had seduced her and then attacked her and then raped her and robbed her, they reminded her of how broken she was, and she lost her confidence. And no matter how hard she tried, she could not get her confidence back. And so she removed herself from her rightful position because she was no longer sure that position was rightfully hers. She was no longer confident that position was hers any longer. And just like America, it turns out that she was right. And that's all I'll say about the Simone Biles just really bizarre episode of just sadness. Very sad. I was thrilled to see that the other American girl stepped up and won gold. And so that's one thing we've got in our favor, folks, is that in America, we have a very deep reservoir of confidence and moral clarity that our forefathers have handed us. And so it's not all gone yet, but it is fleeting. For example, in the Decline and Fall file, listen to a professor teaching a recent endocrinology course at a top medical school, University of California. Here's what the professor says, quote, "I don't want you to think that I'm in any way trying to imply anything. And if you can forgive me, I would really appreciate it. Again, I'm very sorry for that. It was certainly not my intention to offend anyone. The worst thing that I can do as a human being is be offensive." Unquote. So what was his offense? The professor of endocrinology at the medical school had used the term pregnant women. Uh-huh. Here he is again. I said when a woman is pregnant, which implies that only women can get pregnant, and I most sincerely apologize to all of you. So here's a medical doctor denying the fact of biological sex at a medical school. So I know I lost it at a doctor's office the other day to the point where a guy had to tackle me for fear that I was probably going to physically hurt someone. But I'm telling you, when I contemplate the implications of what's happening, I lose my mind and I sometimes go berserk, and I apologize for that. But this is actually happening, ladies and gentlemen. The end of medicine right before our eyes. This is from Barry Weiss on Substack. He asks, why would a medical school professor apologize for referring to a patient's biological sex? Because in the context of her medical school, acknowledging biological sex can be considered transphobic. Transphobic in medical school. Do I want to go on with this? In a lecture on transgendered health, an instructor declared, biological sex, sexual orientation, and gender are all constructs. These are all constructs that we have created. The notion of sex they are learning is just a man-made creation. So that's from a medical school teacher. So notice that the construct is something we have created. It's a man-made creation. They're saying biological sex is something we created, putting themselves in the place of God, which was Lucifer's initial sin. But that's where they want to be, in the place of God. And they have the hubris to imply that they can declare what biological sex is. Our neighbors, ladies and gentlemen, at least a significant plurality of them, and the people who send their kids to these schools, are willing to go along with this and not call them out and say, wait a second, you can't decide what biology is. Biology is. If you drop dead right now, biology continues to be what it is. In fact, drop dead. Let's see here. In medicine, the material reality of sex actually matters. Refusal to acknowledge sex can have devastating effects on patient outcomes, says Barry Weiss on Substack. And then he goes on with some really obvious things that are obvious in medicine. You can't treat men and women the same. It's dangerous, as a matter of fact. I have a quote from one student in medical school right now. The student says, quote, I'm not even sure what I'm being taught. And I'm not sure what I'm not being taught. That's great, doc. That's a future doctor. Uh-huh. They're not sure what they're not being taught. Well, if you're not sure what you're not being taught, you might want to do a little bit of extracurricular review. Because biology is fairly obvious, even to those of us who are not trained medical doctors. Biological sex is fairly obvious, even for us amateurs. We go down to the widespread panic file, where Natural News reports that a physician from Grandview Medical Center in Birmingham, Alabama, recently penned a heart-wrenching story on social media. You may have seen it, folks. It was about young, healthy patients dying from COVID, begging for her for vaccines. That's right. The alleged doctor, Brittany Cobia, says she would hold their hands and tell them, I'm sorry, but it's too late, before intubating them into a coma, after which they would die because they didn't get their vaccine. I'm sorry, it's too late. So this post went viral over this past week. It was shared well over 500,000 times. But Natural News did a closer inspection, and it turns out that Brittany Cobia apparently completely fabricated the story. Her name does not appear in the hospital directory at the medical center in Birmingham, the Grandview Medical Center. So she's not even a real person. The hospital, by the way, has not admitted a single pediatric patient for COVID-19 since their data was made available over a year ago. So there are no young people dying at that hospital, and this doctor doesn't work there. Yet it goes viral and people just believe it's just, it's really kind of scary, actually kind of depressing, scary. And you kind of want to laugh too, because if you don't, you'll lose your mind. Anyway, a Johns Hopkins study finds that there have been zero COVID deaths among healthy children across the nation. That's zero. None. Not one. Without a serious comorbidity has died. But now, from the widespread deception file, I'm going over a little bit, folks, but I got to get a few more of these in because they're important. From the widespread deception file, a study in the UK shows that many COVID hospitalizations consist of people who are not showing symptoms from the coronavirus. They came into the hospital for treatment for other ailments, but guess what? They were tested, and they tested positive. And so they're now COVID hospitalizations, even though, let's say they were admitted for an appendectomy. An appendectomy, I said. But if they test positive for COVID-19, since they test everyone who comes in, they're suddenly listed as a COVID-19 hospitalization. And that enables the local media and the politicians to gin up more and more fear and fear and terror and be scared, mask up, lock down, stay home. It's not worth it. We're all in this together. 2 weeks to slow the spread. Anyway, that's what's happening in England. Is it happening here? Well, I mean, you can extrapolate. I'm gonna bet it is happening here, and it'll be documented before too long. More than half of COVID hospitalizations are patients who only tested positive after admission for something else. Vast numbers are being classed as hospitalized by COVID when they were admitted with other ailments, with the virus picked up by routine testing. They're not even sick. The statistics may overstate the levels of pressure on the National Health Service, and that makes that overstatement causes people to be afraid and causes tyrants to lock down with more power. And I'm telling you, people, this is never going to stop unless we stop it. Those of us with something to lose have to stand up and risk losing it, or this will never stop. More from the widespread deception file, the Centers for Disease Control mask guidance. That's right. They altered their mask guidance this past week. I think they altered it three or four times. Three or four different people told you three or four different places and ways that you could wear masks, you couldn't wear masks, you have to wear masks. At the end of the day, just put on the mask is how it ended up, I think. That's where it stands at the moment. That's right. They say the COVID-19 Delta variant appears to spread as easily as chickenpox. Oh, it's terrifying. Even among the vaccinated. Among the vaccinated. Okay, so I've watched this debate all week about the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. Anyway, let's see. The CDC's gyrations this past week were largely based on unpublished research. Basically, they say that this Delta variant is now dominant. It's dominant, and it causes more severe illness, and it's more transmissible than the viruses that cause Ebola and the flu and even the common cold. It's terrifying. Delta can spread just as easily among the vaccinated, according to this report that was leaked, by the way. Here's a quote from the report. Delta variant vaccine breakthrough cases may be as transmissible as unvaccinated cases. Meaning, why did I take that vaccine? Well, because you were told to take the vaccine. And you're a hysterical coward, mostly. And so you took the vaccine because you're mostly a coward. That's why. The report appears to run counter to CDC's own data, according to the New York Post. The report insisted it was time to acknowledge that the war has changed. That's right. Meaning the goalposts have been moved again, and you people should be used to that. Just shut up and get on your knees. Take the jab, and after you take the jab, put your mask on, and then shut up. Anyway. So the CDC ended up recommending that vaccinated people wear masks indoors and outdoors sometimes too. And maybe in the pool. They haven't reviewed the pool yet, but they'll get to that. Universal masking is essential. According to, who is this? Those behind the report. Oh, the people who leaked the report. They say universal masking is essential. The document argued that universal masking is essential, is what I was trying to say. All right. A federal official insisted to the New York Times that the report was leaked because the CDC is very concerned with the data coming in that Delta is a very serious threat that requires action. Now, we're so concerned for the health and safety of Americans that we had to leak this super secret report so that you people would know the truth. You should be scared. Get very scared. Stay scared. Folks, here's what happened at the highest reaches of government, the Hyde and Barris administration, their puppet masters, whoever they are, Barack and Michelle Obama, George Soros. They realized, folks, that if they gave us the summer off, right, without the fear-mongering, right, without the masks, without the social distancing, without the threat of lockdown, if they gave us an entire summer off, they realized they might just lose us. We might lose interest in being scared of their hysteria. They might lose their lever of ultimate power that they've used so reliably for the past 18 months. They just, little tweak, everybody bows. Well, losing, this cannot be allowed. We can't let people have a summer as if they were in freedom. That's dangerous. And so the hysteria, the fear-mongering continues. The Delta variant is just a, I'm sure it's an actual thing. I've never been a denier that any of these things exist. I'm just not that scared, and I don't think it's worth breaking the world over. Meanwhile, from the divide and conquer file, Alabama's Republican Governor Kay last week launched into an attack on the unvaccinated. Alabama Republican Governor Kay Ivey, who I believe identifies as a female and perhaps is a biological female. She said, quote, "Let's be crystal clear about this issue. The new cases of COVID are because of unvaccinated folks. These folks are choosing a horrible lifestyle of self-inflicted pain. We got to get folks to take the shot. The unvaccinated is who we need to focus on. Folks are supposed to have common sense, but it's time to start blaming the unvaccinated folks, not the regular folks. It's them unvaccinated folks that are letting us down," unquote, says Governor Kay, Republican, in the state of Alabama. So can you believe this, in the deep South, that there are hysterical cowards like this willing to carry the water of the hysterics at the Hyde and Barris administration, who simply want to mass power to themselves for the Marxist takedown of the country? And the Republicans go along with it. Meanwhile, in Australia, they're bringing in the military. Australia is bringing in the military to enforce the lockdowns in New South Wales. That's right, about 300 military personnel have been requested. And listen how the defense minister puts it. He says, "Oh, right, you know, the military be coming in yet, right? It'd be assisting police with ensuring compliance, eh? Right?" "You know, after that, you know, we'll have a few shrimp on a barbie. After the police, we assist the police with ensuring compliance. We just want to make sure, you know. Hey, right, mate? Everyone's compliant, that's all. Just a little bit of assistance is what it is." So, WorldNet Daily reports that the use of military personnel to enforce lockdowns is nothing short of tyranny. And that's a fact, ladies and gentlemen. That has only occurred in third world hellholes and China and other communist dictatorships, that the military comes in to enforce this. And listen to what's happened in Sydney. Why are they locking down? 13 people have died in Sydney during this latest outbreak. 13 people. So WorldNet Daily goes on, "If 13 deaths are enough to justify a full-fledged tyranny, why should anyone believe the government will ever relinquish its newfound power?" And they won't, folks. That's a very obvious thing. They will not. They will not unless we take it back. That's all. Finally, this is from the CDC website itself. "After December 31st, the CDC will withdraw emergency use authorization of the real-time RT-PCR diagnostic panel, first introduced in February 2020 for detection of SARS-CoV-2. So why is the CDC abandoning the PCR test that they approved back in February of last year? Well, they don't have to say. But listen to what they do say. "Visit the FDA website for a list of authorized COVID-19 diagnostic methods. We've got them all for you. And listen to this. Laboratories that have been using the CDC 2019 nCoV RT-PCR assay are encouraged to transition to another FDA-authorized COVID-19 test. Please consider adoption of a multiplexed method that can differentiate SARS-CoV-2 and, like, influenza? What was that? Are you implying that the current test didn't differentiate? That's what they're implying. And I would imply that the current PCR test doesn't differentiate between anything. Any little particle of a cold virus floating through your system, if they amplified it enough, they got it. It's COVID! Be scared! Be terrified! Put on your mask! But they're going to abandon that test, and they admit it right here in their own documentation that it didn't differentiate between infectious disease. Not infectious disease. It did not differentiate between different viruses, different pathogens. And that's not good science. And we're supposed to follow the science, aren't we? Well, folks, follow me out of here. That's the end of the show. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and at American Right to Life and at the Personhood Alliance. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studios, should the Lord Terry and I recover from this cold, we will return next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.